This is KGNU's Morning Magazine. It's Tuesday, August 30th of 2022. I'm your host, Shannon Young. Thank you for joining us here on listener-supported community radio. Coming up on today's program, environmental activists are gathered outside of the Larimer County Courthouse this morning, calling on county commissioners to enforce regulations on oil and gas operations. Diplomats from around the world have failed to reach an agreement again on protecting marine life on the high seas. That story and more on This Week in Water. And we'll go to our comment line to hear what's on the minds of listeners. At the bottom of the hour, we'll have an update from the BBC News headlines. And then it's How on Earth? Today's episode of the KGNU Science Show features Harvard evolutionary biologist Carol Hooven discussing her new book on the role of testosterone in shaping our bodies, brains, and behaviors. At 9 a.m. comes Alan Watts, the British philosopher, writer, and speaker, known for interpreting Eastern religious ideas for a Western audience. Then at 9:30, Joanne Cole will be in the Boulder studio for the Morning Sound Alternative. All that's still ahead, but first it's time for local and regional headlines with KGNU's Luis Licon.
The state Supreme Court has issued a 30-day suspension against 5th Judicial District Judge Mark Thompson. The court suspended Thompson without pay for threatening his stepson with an AR-15 rifle earlier this year. Thompson pointed the rifle at his stepson's chest during an argument last year. He later pleaded guilty to a misdemeanor disorderly conduct in connection to the threat. Thompson formerly served as chief judge for a district that includes Clear Creek, Summit, Eagle, and Lake counties. His 30-day suspension will stretch from October 15th through November 13th. He also must serve a year of unsupervised probation and has to complete an anger management course, but will continue to preside over non-criminal cases. A lawsuit over the Environmental Protection Agency's handling of the 2015 gold mine environmental disaster will start today in Washington, D.C. KGNU's Steve Miller has more.
The New Civil Liberties Alliance is presenting an oral argument on behalf of Gold King mine owner Todd Hennis before the U.S. Court of Federal Claims this morning. On the morning of August 5, 2015, the EPA dug away tons of rock and debris that blocked the portal of Hennis's Gold King mine near Silverton, Colorado. Opening the closed portal of the mine released over 3 million gallons of acid mine drainage and 880,000 pounds of heavy metals onto the private property below and into the waterways downstream, including the Animas River located in the San Juan Mountains near Durango. It took the form of a bright yellow-orange toxic sludge, and the pollution lingers to this day. The lawsuit is challenging the government's physical invasion, occupancy, use, taking, and contamination of Mr. Hennis's property. Hennis says he is seeking compensation for the years the EPA has been using his property without his consent under the Fifth Amendment's Takings Clause, which forbids private property to be taken for public use without just compensation. For KGNU, I'm Steve Miller.
The United States Department of Labor determined a Colorado Springs company willfully exposed a worker to life-threatening injuries. The worker was performing maintenance inside a cement mixer back in March of this year when a co-worker turned on the machine, nearly killing him. The Department of Labor's Occupational Safety and Health Administration, OSHA, found the company Lindsay Precast, Inc. failed to comply with federal workplace safety standards. The company supplies precast burial vaults to the Department of Veteran Affairs. OSHA has cited the company for prior violations in 2017 and 2019 and is proposing a fine of over $200,000 for the most recent violation. During the investigation of the March incident, OSHA uncovered other safety failures that included not properly training their workers on safety laws in general and on powering on and off machinery in particular. The company has 15 business days from the date of the citation to comply with safety laws. The Rocky Mountain U.S. Forest Service has announced funding for a series of projects to improve water quality, roads, trails, and fish habitats through a new collaborative aquatic landscape restoration program and the existing Legacy Roads and Trails program. Some of the areas that will benefit from the funding will be the Arapahoe Roosevelt National Forest, Pike and San Isabel, San Juan National Forest, White River National Forest, and Black Hills National Forest, along with other national forests across the state. Frank Beam, the Rocky Mountain Forester, said in a press release that the funds will address much-needed critical road, trail, and stream improvements benefiting local communities and forest visitors in the Rocky Mountain region. All 6th graders at Lafayette's Angevine Middle School will be able to take part of a mental health literacy program this year. The Boulder Valley School District is partnering up with the All Advocates for All Youth program and the University of Colorado Anschutz to run the programs. The program will last 6 weeks, and volunteers that are teaching students will follow a curriculum with activities that will help support students to increase their resilience and self-efficacy skills. According to The Impact, this will help students manage and lower their stress. According to the Daily Camera, Allison Billings, Impact and Education Executive Director, said that rather than just addressing the kids who are just struggling, it helps everybody understand more about mental health and well-being. Today in Boulder, we are going to see a high of 91 and a low of 56. In Denver, we are going to see a high of 93 and a low of 62. In Fort Collins, there's going to be a high of 92 and a low of 51. Outside of the Boulder studio, it is 63 degrees. For KGNU, I am Luis Licon.
You are listening to The Morning Magazine on KGNU. I'm your host, Shannon Young. Members of the Larimer Alliance for Health, Safety, and the Environment and 350 Northern Colorado are rallying outside of the Larimer County Administrative Building in Fort Collins this morning ahead of a county commissioners' meeting. Rally participants are calling on the commissioners to enforce regulations on new and existing oil and gas facilities within Larimer County. This comes days after state regulators shut down a tank site operated by Prospect Energy, citing compliance failures. Joining me now live is Doug Henderson, a resident of Fort Collins and a member of the Larimer Alliance for Health, Safety, and the Environment. Good morning, Doug.
Good morning, Shannon. Are we connected?
Yes, we are. Will you start off by painting the scene for our listeners? Who all will gather with you outside of the Larimer County Administrative Building at 8:30, and why?
I'm outside the county building now, and at 8:30 we're going to have a rally because the commissioners, the three county commissioners, will be arriving for a weekly administrative meeting that they hold, and we're trying to convince the commissioners and the county government that they should enforce the local regulations that they adopted to provide protection to people, health, safety, and the environment from harm by the oil and gas industry.
And
the folks gathering here will be a group of local folks that have been fighting to clean up our air and to protect against oil and gas for a number of years. It's several groups. It's the Larimer Alliance for Health, Safety, and Environment, the local group, Sierra Club Group, Hoodoo Canyon Group, and a number of other groups that are allied with us. And so we're here to invite the commissioners to listen to us.
And the regulations you mentioned, what do they call for, and how long have they been on the books?
Well, in 2019, the state legislature passed a major reform law that provided local governments with authority to regulate oil and gas development within their boundaries. Larimer County government at that time was dominated by Republicans on the commission, and they held the first policymaking process in which they described Weld County as the model that Larimer County should follow. And a bunch of us gagged, thinking the last thing we want to do is have thousands of essentially unregulated oil and gas facilities around the county. We didn't want the county government to roll out the red carpet to oil and gas. So we participated in that process, but we were not very successful. The county government at that time set a very low bar for oil and gas development. In the last election a couple of years ago, the county commission became totally Democrat. The public wasn't very happy with the Republicans. They voted Democrats in, and there was another round of policymaking, which significantly reformed the county regulations. So the county now has on the books fairly good regulations. But unfortunately, now that we have problems and we have local authority where the local government could deal with the problems, the local government has since been claiming that it has no authority to actually enforce its regulations. So it sort of says, well, we adopted these regulations and they're worth wet toilet paper. 6 months ago, we wrote to the county government a rather lengthy legal explanation of why they do have local authority to enforce. And the county government has, since was actually 5 months, been silent about this until last Monday, when suddenly the county government seemed to decide that it does have legal authority. However, we have yet to be informed of the details of that. So we're trying to convince the county government that they actually should enforce their regulations to protect people's health, safety, and environment.
So you mentioned until last Monday. What happened last Monday?
Last Monday, the county commissioners held a work session along with the county attorney's office. That session was an executive session, and so we're not privy to the content of it. But at the very end of it, for a few minutes, they made some public comments. And they announced that the county has now decided that it can enforce its regulations, of which we're very pleased, and that details about what that means will be forthcoming. So we're waiting to find out what that will mean.
A division of the Colorado Department of Health and Environment shut down the Krause site of a Prospect energy operation there just a few days ago. In its press release, the state of Colorado indicated that Prospect Energy, and I'm quoting here, poses a unique risk to public welfare. What were the issues at that site in particular, and how long did it take regulators to shut it down?
Well, that site has been leaking toxic mess and climate-damaging gases for years. There's a local resident who for years has filed complaints. The group Earthworks has documented emissions which would qualify as illegal emissions if the state of Colorado would accept Earthworks data. A court will, but the state won't. So this has been going on a long time. There have been many complaints. And finally, the state Air Pollution Control Division sent a cease and desist order to Prospect Energy to shut the facility. We don't know what the next steps are, but we're very glad that the state of Colorado has finally acted to actually implement the state law, which prioritizes protecting people's health, safety, and environment over protecting the oil and gas industry. So we're very glad. We think this should be the norm. It shouldn't be the exception. And we hope that shutting this Krause facility signals a real shift in the state. We also think that Larimer County government should have already done this, that they should have enforced their regulations. They know of violations at that site. They know it's been damaging health, safety, and environment, and yet they have done nothing. And so we're encouraging the county to take action. There are other Prospect Energy facilities in Larimer County, at least one that we know of, that also should be shut. And we're curious why APCD shut one facility and not others where it knows there are violations.
My guest today has been Doug Henderson. He's a resident of Fort Collins and a member of the Larimer Alliance for Health, Safety, and the Environment. He's speaking with me outside of the administrative building, the county administrative building, just ahead of a county commissioner's meeting. Thank you, Doug, for your time this morning.
Well, thank you, Shannon. Glad to share, and let's hope we're successful today.
Time now for the latest edition of This Week in Water with Jamie Sudler and Franny Halperin.
Turning wind turbines into gummy bears. That story and more on H2O Radio's weekly news report. I'm Jamie Sudler.
I'm Franny Halperin, and it's This Week in Water.
Last week, diplomats from around the world met at the United Nations, attempting to reach an agreement on how to protect our planet's oceans.
The waters at stake are the high seas that begin 200 miles off the coast of each country. Currently, only about 1% are protected from things like plastic pollution, abandoned fishing gear, overfishing, and the effects of climate change.
A major goal of a treaty is to create marine protected areas covering 30% of the seas for long-term conservation of biodiversity. But there's still disagreement over how to create them and to share the benefits for marine life.
Biodiversity is more than preserving just whales and turtles. It includes conserving microbes in the seas that produce half of the oxygen in the atmosphere.
According to Greenpeace, richer countries, including the U.S. and Canada, have delayed reaching a treaty. Only on the last day of the gathering was there some progress on sharing resources derived from marine plants and animals that could be used by pharmaceutical, chemical, and cosmetic companies.
Research into those uses is costly, and developing nations don't want to be left out of profits derived from the ocean. In addition, Russia has refused to engage in the process at all.
Liz Karen of the Pew Charitable Trusts said she remained encouraged by the progress that was made during the 2 weeks of negotiations, even if a treaty wasn't finalized, and she's hopeful a new session of the UN can be called by the end of the year.
If you had to guess, which do you think could produce more lettuce? A rural farm or an urban garden?
According to researchers in the UK, it turns out that urban farming produces up to 4 times more per square meter of some crops than conventional agriculture, including leafy greens, cucumbers, and tubers.
The team estimates that up to 20% of food is produced in cities, and as their populations boom, urban agriculture will be not only an important source of food, but a way to fight inequitable access and food deserts.
The researchers speculate that urban agriculture may produce more because crops can be grown inside throughout the year. Another reason may be that urban farms don't need the space for large farm equipment.
Wind farms are spreading around the globe, which is huge toward getting us to a clean energy future. But the wind turbine blades themselves have only about a 20-year lifespan, and also new, larger, more efficient ones at sea are coming online that can generate more electricity.
That means lots of old blades are ending up in landfills. Not a good look for a green industry, but what are you supposed to do with a piece of fiberglass the length of half a football field that's not easy to transport or recycle?
If you're John Dorgan at Michigan State University, you turn blades into gummy bears? That's one potential use of a new type of resin his team developed to make turbine blades. The difference is, once a blade made with his resin completes its lifespan, the resin can be dissolved to make new blades or mixed with other materials to create consumer goods, from kitchen counters to windows.
And as Scientific American reports, cooking the resin at high temperatures produced a superabsorbent polymer often used in diapers, and with a little more processing, it was converted into a common food preservative, which the team turned into the candy bears.
It's a sweet way of showing how wind turbine blades, which go round and round, could one day be part of a circular economy. And finally, ever since the age of sail between the 16th and 19th centuries, when global trade was dominated by galleons and clipper ships, vessels have operated from the same maxim, SFTW. Sail fast, then wait.
To this day, ships book it to their destinations without any regard for local conditions, only to idle offshore until a berth becomes available, wasting fuel and generating toxic emissions.
But a consortium called Blue Visby Solutions wants to change SFTW by creating a type of air traffic control for cargo ships. It's developed software that optimizes arrival times for vessels by comparing their profile with other ships headed to the same destination. It factors in port congestion as well as environmental conditions like weather, currents, swell, and tides.
The program is set to launch next year and would allow ships to slow down to cut fuel consumption and emissions, but still keep their spot in line at the port. This benefits the climate as well as ship owners who save on costs with more efficient journeys.
The developers say their platform could potentially reduce the carbon footprint of the maritime industry by about 15% and has the potential to slash emissions from global shipping by more than 60 million tons of CO2 per year.
Independent research shows the adoption of their solution would reduce underwater noise pollution by 45% and lower the risk of striking whales and other sea life by 40%.
Sounds like a no-brainer for the shipping industry to stop SFTW ASAP.
That's it for This Week in Water. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.
We now check in with KGNU's comment line and the listeners who share their thoughts about what they hear on KGNU.
Hi, I was enjoying a commentary program earlier this week in the morning with Duncan Campbell, who did one of his long monologues, which I happen to agree with, about electing Democratic senators in the midterm election. And then he was to be joined by a co-host who did join him briefly. And then came the inevitable technical difficulties when they opened the lines to the public. And Duncan lost the co-host and the person online who wanted to make a comment. And the next 10 minutes, it was not resolved. And this seems to happen fairly frequently when KGNU does a call-in commentary program. I just wish that you had better technical support. Despite that, I enjoy your programming and your music. Thank you.
Hi, I'm calling about Radio Nibbles, which aired last Thursday, August 25th. I was excited when Shannon asked John Lindorf about what was coming up over the weekend so he could inform the listeners about the Planet-Based Living Festival. He stated that all the food vendors were offering vegan products and quickly added that, quote, "that sounds kind of boring," end quote. And when Shannon pointed out that some people are really into that, John was again dismissive with the words, quote, "it's not, anyway," end quote. John's judgment was unnecessary and demonstrated a lack of experience with plant-based cuisine. Many of the guests on Radio Nibbles talk about sustainability, but the reality is that animal agriculture is one of the two greatest producers of greenhouse gases. Our society clearly has a bias against plant-based diets, and that bias was audible in the opinion expressed last week's Radio Nibbles. It would be great to have occasional shows on KGNU featuring vegan cooking, nutrition, and the ecological aspects of plant-based versus animal-based diets. Thanks.
Hi, KGNU, and hello, all the beautiful KGNU listeners out there. I was listening to, I'm a solar member, and I was just listening to KGNU last Friday, August 26th. And I heard the Connections program with Duncan Campbell and Lisa Graves. And I have to say that the views that they presented and the depth of information about what's going on politically now with everything was just astounded me. I'd never heard anything like it. And I haven't heard anything like it in the media lately. And that just, for me, highlights how special KGNU is in presenting really just one-of-a-kind information and viewpoints. So I value it so much. It's so important for our community. Thank you very much.
If you'd like to make a comment on something you heard on KGNU, you can leave a message at our listener comment line at 303-447-9911. We play the messages back on Tuesday mornings at 8:25. That's all the time we have for today's Morning Magazine. Thanks to Luis Licon, Steve Miller, Alexis Kenyon, Rosanna Longo-Better, Jamie Sedler, and Franny Halperin for their contributions to today's program. I've been your host, Shannon Young.